Radio Prague News.
The European Commission will sue the Czech Republic, Poland and Hungary over their reluctance to accept migrants. The decision has come under fire in Prague, and the regional court in Nový Jičín has acquitted all 10 people standing trial in the case of a collapsed bridge in Studenka, which caused a serious train crash in 2008. The European Commission has announced it will sue the Czech Republic, Poland and Hungary in the bloc's top court for their refusal to take in asylum seekers in line with the European Commission's mandatory redistribution mechanism. The issue has caused a rift between those reluctant to take in refugees and other European governments who accuse them of a lack of solidarity. The EC's deputy chair, Frans Timmermans, said a change of attitude on the part of these countries' governments could still resolve the situation out of court. Meanwhile, Czech politicians across the political spectrum have criticized the European Commission's decision to take the country to court over migrants. The newly appointed Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš said he would try to negotiate the lawsuit's withdrawal with European Commission representatives at the EU summit in Brussels next week. He said migrant quotas were not the right solution for Europe and only boosted extremist parties on the continent. The head of the right-wing Civic Democrats, Petr Fiala, said that the quotas were a bad decision and taking the Czech Republic to court was even worse. He said such moves only undermined the trust of the public in EU institutions. The president's spokesman reiterated the president's view that mandatory migrant quotas interfered in the Czech Republic's internal affairs. The regional court in Nový Jičín has acquitted all 10 people standing trial in the case of a collapsed bridge in Studenka, which caused a serious train crash in 2008. The bridge collapsed just minutes before a passenger train ploughed into the debris. 8 people died in the accident, dozens of others were injured, and the damage amounted to 180 million crowns. The judge ruled that since experts were unable to say exactly what caused the bridge to collapse, he could not attach the blame to any given person. Those charged in the case include civil engineers from the firm contracted with the renovation of the bridge. Families of the victims have expressed deep disappointment over the verdict. The Czech Republic is one of the safest countries as regards cyber threat, according to a survey released by Checkpoint, a multinational provider of hardware and software products for IT security. The Czech Republic figures 119th on a list of countries surveyed. The countries most at risk, judging by the number of cyber attacks that have taken place, are the Dominican Republic, followed by India, China, the United States and Hong Kong. The Czech Republic's foreign trade surplus in October slumped by 5 billion crowns year on year to 9.7 billion, according to preliminary data released by the Czech Statistics Office on Thursday. Compared to the previous month, exports in October increased by 0.7% and imports by 2.2%. And finally, the weather forecast: Friday should be partly cloudy to overcast, with more rain and snow showers in the eastern parts of the country and day temperatures between 3 and 7 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarova, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program, Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš has a week to put together his new cabinet team, but will the new government get its necessary support in the lower house? Then the Czech Catholic Church says it's near a deal with the Vatican for the return of the remains of Cardinal Josef Beran. More in a moment. And in the second half of the program, we go back in history and learn about the role of so-called long hair musicians in the Czech underground, as well as the legacy of Václav Havel. That's all ahead. The Czech Republic's newly appointed Prime Minister, Andrej Babiš, has 1 week to get it together. His new cabinet team, that is. Mr. Babiš is planning to draw on ANO Party's former government members as well as a number of incoming experts. But how likely will the new cabinet get a majority in the first confidence vote in the Chamber of Deputies? That was a question Ruth Frankova put to Jiří Pehe.
I think that the likelihood of Mr. Babiš passing a confidence vote is quite small. I think that he doesn't even wants to pass the confidence vote at this point, because the way he was putting together his government suggests that he is probably thinking about a second attempt in which he could form the government. The reason may be that the first unsuccessful attempt to form the government may be used as a tool to put pressure on other political parties. It may also be something that he has coordinated with the president, because President Zeman will run for re-election in mid-January, and certainly if the country doesn't have a stable government at that point, the government that didn't pass the vote of confidence, that would play into Mr. Zeman's hands, because the president could argue that a new, inexperienced president would not be a good choice.
There have been some reports that the Social Democrats want to avoid early elections at any cost and would be willing to support or tolerate Andrei Babiš's government.
Yes, I think that this is what Mr. Babiš actually counts on. So this is why I don't think he really is thinking seriously about this first government. He knows that with the second attempt, he will have better chances to put pressure on other political parties, and the Social Democrats are a good example of that, simply because this is a party in this array that cannot afford early elections, just like several other parties. And Mr. Babiš can tell them, look, if you don't work with me this time, then we are getting closer to early elections, and I am the only top politician in this country that has money to be actually able to run a good campaign before the early elections.
And to what extent would you say are Babiš's and President Zeman's futures interlinked? If Babiš doesn't succeed, does it reflect badly on the president?
Well, I think that Mr. Zeman actually wouldn't mind if this first government doesn't go through, because in my opinion, the scenario has been agreed on with Mr. Babiš. Mr. Zeman said already before the elections that even if Mr. Babiš doesn't succeed with his first attempts to form a government, he would appoint him again, which is highly unusual. And so I think that this is what both of them count on. I think that the public would probably, with all the PR machinery that Mr. Babiš has at his disposal, would be led to believe that this is the failure of the uncooperative other parties. I think that Mr. Zeman would strengthen this message, so I don't think it would be seen as his defeat.
Political analyst Jiří Pehe was talking to Ruth Franková about the new Babiš government there. The Czech Catholic Church says it's near to sealing an agreement with the Vatican for the return of the remains of Cardinal Josef Beran back to his homeland. Cardinal Beran was persecuted by the communist regime when he came to power in 1948, but eventually left for Rome, where he lived out his days. Chris Johnston has the details.
Archbishop of Prague and Primate of Czechoslovakia, Cardinal Josef Beran, became a symbol of resistance to the communist regime, which took power in February 1948. Although he initially welcomed the new government and tried to get along with it, Cardinal Beran soon found that the communists regarded the church as a subversive ideological enemy and possible focus of opposition. They started to persecute the church and even tried to set up an alternative one which would bow to its wishes. He was subject to house arrest in and outside Prague, prevented from carrying out his duties, and the communists tried without success to discredit him. Eventually, he was invited to Rome in 1965 after being appointed a cardinal. He weighed up whether to go or not, knowing the risks, but eventually decided to make the journey. But the regime later refused to allow him to return to his homeland. Cardinal Beran died in exile in 1969 and was buried at St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican after the communist regime refused to allow his remains to be returned to his home country. Stanislav Zeman is spokesman for the Prague Archdiocese. He explained why the issue was important and how talks with the Vatican have evolved.
Because of the last will of Cardinal Josef Beran, who wanted to be buried in Prague, the current Cardinal Dominik Duka asked for fulfilling this Cardinal Beran's wish. And in the spirit of this, there were some negotiations with a specific Vatican congregation. And at this very moment, we are expecting the written approval of the Vatican Secretary of State.
The hope is that the agreement could be sealed by the end of this year or early next, and that would pave the way for Cardinal Beran's remains being returned to Prague in 2018, the centenary of the founding of the first Czechoslovak Republic. Two dates have already been earmarked to possibly mark that event. The first could be the feast day of St. Adalbert of Prague, which takes place in April. The later alternative could be the feast day of St. Wenceslas on September 28th, which is also the Czech National Day. Spokesman Zeman explained why the reburial is significant for the country and why the church is keen it should take place next year.
Life of Cardinal Beran is a symbol of heroic resistance against the communist regime. In one part of his life, he was home arrested. For example, there was an event in June 1949 when the secret communist police destroyed the celebration in the Cathedral of Prague. So the transfer of the remains of Cardinal Beran would also heal symbolically this wound.
Stanislav Zeman, spokesman for Prague's Archbishopric, ending that report by Chris Johnstone. And Chris stays with us for today's main feature.
Václav Havel has been the subject of many books, and quite a few have been devoted to the so-called Czechoslovak underground, the cultural movement which, above all in music, but also through literature and art, ignored the designs and instructions of the ruling Communist Party. But while the link between the two has already been made, a new book bluntly argues that without the support of the underground, dissident leader Havel would have been nowhere in creating a coherent opposition. Capella, or Band, is the title of the newly released book, jointly authored by historian Ladislav Krdner and former underground member, now researcher, František Starek Čunas. It carries the subtitle Background of an Action Which Created Charter 77. The action in question is one of the many sporadic moves launched by the secret police against independent bands, which were seen as challenging and undermining the values of the regime. Ladislav Kudrna explains.
Tu akci Kapela, která byla vyhlášena v listopadu 1985.
The action Kapela was announced in November 1985 and went on until November 1989. The target was to eliminate all the negative rock bands, that is, all the bands that negatively influenced young people. There were a lot more such actions. For their context, we have to take into account what phase the Cold War was in at the time. Czechoslovakia, as a satellite of the Soviet Union, did not have its own independent foreign policy. Domestic policy was often shaped by the state of the confrontation between the Soviet Union and the United States. At the end of the 1970s, the state security services did not intervene as much against the signatories of Charter 77 as much as they had done in 1976, because they feared that the international uproar that would result.
Being rather prone to conspiracy theories, partly because they were behind conspiracies and plots of their own, the party and secret police saw the underground as part of a wider Western move against them. But the Czech underground was a lot more apolitical than its Western equivalent, which was overwhelmingly left-wing oriented and sought to overthrow or at least severely challenge the establishment. In Czechoslovakia, the movement was opposed to the regime. That was a given. But the movement did not seek to challenge the regime itself, but rather wanted to be left alone and operate in parallel outside its wide remit. Still, the underground Czech style was a powerful and potent force, and that also helped to fuel the regime's fears. Ladislav Kudrner again.
A pokud mluvíme o té síle toho hnutí, tak ku příkladu v severních Čechách.
If we are talking about how strong that movement was in northern Bohemia, which was a bastion for the underground, in the mid-70s, the state security service counted around 1,000 fans of hippie groups, as they, the police, referred to the underground. If we talk about the overall numbers from the 1970s and going into the 1980s, then the total of number of people in the country could be around 80,000 to 100,000 young people. This is a really big figure. That's one of the reasons why the state security, which had for so long left the underground to one side, acted. Events like Rudolfov and the Festival for Second Culture shocked the state security services because of the sheer numbers of people who came to such events from all across the country.
A ještě více samozřejmě překvapilo to, že ti lidi pochází napříč republikou.
Rudolfov near České Budějovice was an illegal concert which was brutally disrupted by the security forces. And it was the wide youth following and potency of the underground, particularly photos around the band, the Plastic People of the Universe, and their one-time manager, the outspoken alternative artist and poet, Ivan Martin Jirous, that Havel eventually grasped during the mid-1970s. According to the author, it was though Jirous, not Havel, who made the first move to create the link between the underground and the largely intellectual dissenters surrounding Havel. The go-between was the cultural historian František Šmejkal.
Zřejmě to bylo tak, že Jirous sám poslal doktora Šmejkala za Havlem.
It was apparently Jirous on his own that sent Dr. Šmejkal to Havel. He somehow had the feeling that the underground movement was heading for a confrontation and wanted to search for natural allies where he could. At that time, the opposition to the communist regime was very disunited. It would hardly have occurred to anyone in March 1976 that at the end of that year, the opposition, which consisted of those around Václav Havel, dissident Catholics, former and excluded communists, and reformists from 1968, would unite around a common platform, which was Charter 77. People like Professor Jan Patočka, František Riegel, Jiří Hájek, the former foreign minister, these people had never heard of the underground, never heard of Jirous, or the band, the Plastic People of the Universe. It's likely that if such people as Pavel Kohout or Professor Patočka or the excellent poet Seifert had heard that music, it would have not been their cup of tea.
Vynikající básník Seifert slyšeli tu hudbu, tak asi zřejmě to nebyl jejich šálek kávy.
Jirous was the author in the mid-70s of what became regarded as the Manifesto of the Czech Underground. And the move to reach out to Havel was apparently an opportune one, since the dissident playwright was facing a rebuff of his own for his own efforts to stir up resistance to the regime.
Jak známo, tak v dubnu roku 1975 napsal Václav Havel.
As is known, Václav Havel in April 1975 wrote his famous open letter to the General Secretary of the Central Committee of the Czechoslovak Communist Party, Gustav Husák. But the letter did not really stir things up that much in Czechoslovakia, which was then subject to the wave of so-called normalization. The letter was not referred to much, and when it was talked about, it was mostly within the circle of Havel's friends. On the other hand, around a year later in March 1976, there was an unexpected upheaval, and that upheaval was prompted by some long-haired people playing strange music. Czechoslovak viewers and readers realized from their televisions and press that there was some big trial going on with these strange people, and they began asking themselves what all the fuss was about and why it was happening. The state security agency and government said these were drug addicts and free riders who didn't work. But people wondered what all the fuss was about and over these long-haired people who played music.
Tak proč tolik pohybu, tolik otázek, takového dramatu kolem skupiny lidí, kteří měli dlouhé vlasy a hráli hudbu, která se nelíbila režimu.
The new book is fairly blunt in its assessment that Charter 77, the main challenge to the communist regime in the following years, and the rallying ground for the opposition, would probably not have been born without the cooperation of the underground. Without the underground, it says, Havel would have been a general with no troops. Overall, those linked to the underground represented around 40% of the signatories of Charter 77 and were among its main propagators around the country. Historian Kodorna reckons Havel was fairly calculating in all this.
Havel nebyl zrovna žádný velký znalec hudby. A to neznamená, že později skutečně si ty plastiky neoblíbil.
Havel was never any great connoisseur of music. That doesn't mean he did not come to later like the Plastic People of the Universe. What interests us is how at the end of one meeting, let's say one shared drink, he came to have an interest in a group of people he had shown no interest in before. It was just one evening with Jirous. All that was very nice, but there were many such evenings. We realize that Václav Havel was always a very ambitious man, and that's fine, there's nothing at all wrong in that. And he saw that things were starting to stir in society, and that if he didn't want to miss the train, that he would have to jump on fast. He felt perfectly correctly that there was a chance to unify the opposition among this common platform, and a lot of these who were stirring were as a result of the former excluded communists.
I mezi těmi bývalými komunisty, vyloučenými.
Even so, the united opposition to the communist regime that started to take shape was not always harmonious, far from it. Gudrun says underground leaders resented the fact that they felt to some extent muzzled by the Charter 77 leadership, and they wanted a more active and wider role out there in the public. The book draws on many archive sources, both of the Communist Party and the secret police at Prague headquarters and in the regions. One somewhat paradoxical aspect is the fact that in many cases, the official Communist Youth Movement was happy to hold concerts by non-official bands, which the police were trying to suppress. And they also sought to stage their own alternative rock concerts. The crowds and money both types of events could pull in were significant factors.
Důležitou otázkou taky možná na prvním místě byl i ten zisk.
Profits were also an important aspect, perhaps the primary issue. Members of the youth associations wanted to make a profit. They were frequently in conflict with the leadership of the Communist Party. The party was constantly seeking some re-evaluation of rock music. The last demand came in 1987. Meanwhile, the youth associations were pushing for the creation of their own house of culture, for their own music and publishing businesses, so that they could represent all artists up to 35 years old. So there was a head-on conflict between these old communists, symbolized by Husák, and these new young technocrats. You've been listening to that history with Chris Johnstone about hairy guys, Havel, and in the end there, Husák. That brings us just about to the end of today's program, but a quick reminder, if you'd like to comment on anything you've heard today, please write to english@radio.cz. Also, don't forget, Radio Prague is on the social networks such as Facebook and Twitter. I'm Jan Velliger. Thank you so much for joining us this day, and take care. Bye-bye.